justice.
You see what I mean? We should have more now, not less. Think about it. I think it has to do with mentality. Okay? And then we are buying into this concept of objectivity, which has been used to control us. Oh, I don't want to be emotionally involved. I'm being objective. How in the world can you be objective and be a human being and be an African and you know, live in a culture? How can you be objective? What does that mean? You know, a machine is objective. Maybe. See what I'm saying? Or depending on if it's a computer that has been programmed by somebody who has a particular perspective on life, they have to be, because that's what it means to be human. So we can't buy into that. But we are, to our detriment. We are buying into individualism. Even our concept of family now has become two or three people. That's right, and we say, okay, I'm doing this for my family. But that is nothing in terms of the African collective. We are separate from each other. We are separate from spirit, and we have an ideology of go for self. Let me make it myself. And that's what our youth are learning, and that's the most detrimental thing to an African consciousness. It is individualistic ideology. We have to look at how much we have accepted that. What that also means is that we have a lack of sense of accountability. You see, we can't blame our children for doing what comes right out of what we're doing. Who are we accountable to? Remember those egotistical leaders I talked about before? You know what our problem is? Who are they accountable to? Nobody. So they decide to do this one day, that the next day, and we just run along and do whatever they say. But you gotta think, what is the plan? You know? Tell me your plan. And I don't mean for 5 months. I mean, what's your plan? What's your plan for 5 years? What's your life plan? What is your vision of the African victory? That's what you have to ask people. And then you can say to them, well, how does this fit into the plan? Not just what you happen to feel like doing on one particular day. And then take resources from the community to do that. This comes from us buying into the concept of individualism, into egoism, and not feeling that we're accountable to anybody. And then us not having the organizational structure of the institution which could indeed hold someone accountable. Does not make sense to talk about getting an African person in office, in this system here, and then you can't hold them accountable for their behavior. We do that all the time. We're just happy because, you know, they're African. Or they look African. Marriage for us is no longer child-oriented, and that is the purpose of marriage in Africa. Our lives are not committed to our children first. We don't have a priority on children. That's why we don't build schools. Because we don't see these young minds as being the most important thing that we have. We're marrying for wrong reasons. That goes back to all those other things, materialism and so forth. We involve ourselves in relationships which are not for the nation. They're not for the community. You see, they're not for the collective. An African-centered relationship should benefit the community. Those are the kinds of things you have to ask yourself when you begin thinking about who you're relating to and so forth. These are hard questions, you see? Because what we're doing is we're getting standards which tell us how to behave. But we're used to living in this society which doesn't hold anybody accountable. So the worst thing for an African person, go for yourself. Whatever makes you happy. there is no longer a development of the self, a concept of how intensely one must work on developing the self. That's work. So again, what about away from it? Okay, you don't see on television, they're not telling you develop the self. They're telling you buy this product, buy that product, or this is the way that you should relate to your heroes or whatever, you know. They're telling you what they want you to do. Our elders, because there is no development of self, it is difficult for an elder to be an elder. Let me explain what I mean by that. An elder is not, in the African conception, just a person who is old. Because what it would have been assumed in the African conception is that with that age would have come the experience and the knowledge of the culture, which you could then use to teach others. Now, it's just a matter of getting old. You see, we don't understand the role of an elder. It's a very serious responsibility. And then we don't have the respect for the elders. So you see how those things feed on each other. And now I'm going to deal with something very, hard to talk about in a large audience, but I think it's very important. Because I want to show you how I'm consistent in everything that I talk about. And I'm doing this because of how much I love African people, and I believe that it's urgent. Brother said only it's urgent. This is urgent. The time is now. We no longer have a spiritual concept of sexuality.
Yes, ma'am.
We see people as sex objects, and therefore they are. They're no longer human. That's not an African concept. Therefore, we engage in what I call profane sex. Let me tell you what I mean by that. There is no sacred concept of the interaction of human beings. So that, and I say this word SEX is, to me, a European concept. Mm-hmm. It becomes a commodity. It can be a commodity.
Right.
It can be bought and sold. We become promiscuous. We have no discretion. We involve ourselves in sexual behavior which expresses only narcissism. Okay? Maybe seven or people told or whatever. But I believe that all of this is a part of nation building. It's got to be. I mean, in Africa, certainly.
Accountability always. Yes, ma'am.
In Africa, how you express your sexuality was seen as important as how you plow the fields, as how you organize the warriors to defend the group. It's all we are whole beings. Okay? Narcissism is fixing on and seeing everything in terms of the physical pleasure, or what you think is the physical pleasure of the individual self. That's all it is. We live here in Babylon, in a society which is narcissistic. And I'm saying that we have taken that on. That accounts for many of the sexual behaviors that people are involved in. Do you understand? And I'm going to show you a very, very different concept. That kind of idea of sex is anti-life, by the way. The African feeling is pro-life. I want you to keep that in mind. You can only get that kind of concept by separating the physical, you see, from the spiritual, and then denying the spiritual. Everything becomes physical. And we'll jump to another area, and that is our dependence on Western medicine. And by that I mean, I'm not saying, you know, you don't go to the doctor and so forth and so on. I'm not saying that. I'm saying we have become totally dependent on a particular concept of, I don't want to call it healing because it ain't a concept of healing. Right? I don't know what to call it. But in that concept is no idea of prevention. They cannot talk about prevention. They tell you it's prevention, but when you look at what they're talking about early detection. Is that prevention, I ask you? Did you ever think about that? Just finding this disease, you know, in its early stages. That's not prevention. So if you ask them, well, how do I keep myself from getting that? They can't tell you. This is not the African concept of healing. And it comes about again because of the separation of mind and body, the spiritual and the material. And so what happens within the context of Western medicine is that the symptom is treated, even if it means causing something else, as long as you get rid of whatever that symptom is for that period of time. You haven't gotten to the source of it, it doesn't matter. And that's what we're involved in. So we're involved in just taking a whole lot of pills and artificial synthetic things that obviously are poisonous to the body. So what I'm saying is, you have to understand that most of the physicians that you go to have not been, they haven't learned anything about diet. They don't know anything about nutrition. Because that's not what's taught in medical schools in this country. Okay? And of course, spirit for them is unimportant. They don't know anything about the spirit. Now, an African would ask, how in the world could you heal me if you don't know anything about the spirit? You see? But I'm saying, what I'm trying to show you is we don't ask these questions anymore because we've gotten so used to thinking in another being's mind. You see what I'm saying? We're so out of our minds that we don't ask these questions. Doesn't even seem peculiar to us. And of course, we eat any and everything. Because we've also lost the African concept of wholeness, the wholeness of the person, you see. And in general, we are lacking self-discipline. And I say these things again because you can't blame the children. Because what do they see in us? We have become media dependent. We allow ourselves to be attached to the media. And that media then, you know, you turn on that TV. Simple little act. Or you push the button there, right? Your psyche is then attacked by what you see on the TV. And we don't look at that at all. We don't monitor that at all. Whatever they show, that's what we see. Those things are affecting us. Those images are affecting us. You say, well, I'm conscious, so it doesn't affect me. That's not true. And if you don't understand the depth of what happens in terms of energy, of vibration, and so forth. Okay? All of these things we need to look at. So that is what I wanted to give in the little picture of how I see us being affected, contaminated by the European worldview, European conceptions, how they are acting on us. And so you say, well, what do we do? What can we do? There's no reason to feel defeated at all because we have an ancestral legacy. There is the African worldview. There is a whole system of thought that has a profound, embodies a profound concept and understanding of the universe, which our ancestors...
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. I said, empty your mind. Be shapeless. Be formless. Like water.
Justice.
No. Build civilizations on. And we have little pieces of this in us. So we have a model. And I'm talking about us using the African worldview as a paradigm, as a model for the construction of the African nation. So what I'm going to do is, I guess it will have to be briefly, reacquaint us with some aspects of the African worldview. Okay, and again, I'm doing that a little bit in Let the Circle Be Unbroken. For one thing, the African worldview gives us a picture of the unity of the universe, where all things are interrelated and interdependent. There is the idea of wholeness, a holism we get. Also, participation in that universe in a very real way is what happens by virtue of being African and understanding this view. Synthesis becomes very important. Again, wholeness. Intuition is knowledge that comes from within. That doesn't mean it has no relationship to what is outside of us. But intuition, using that, is the way in which you connect the inner to the outer. And for the African, intuition is extremely important. You see, being involved in what you know is very important. And that's a part of what we mean by intuition. What we also mean by intuition is that we believe that there is an ancestral consciousness that exists in all African people. And that what intuition is the tapping into that consciousness so that we are able to get knowledge from the collective, from the ancestral being, which in turn is connected to the universe. You see, it's a very deep kind of concept. But if you talk about science here, they're not going to talk about intuition as being important. In fact, they're going to tell you, don't use that. Cut your feelings away. And that's what you're learning in the classroom, is get rid of your feelings, your emotions. Africans are not going to tell you that. You better use that. You see, if you don't know anything, you better use what's in here and learn how to hear it and how to be in tune with it. Our conception of the universe is as energy and forces interacting with each other, and that we need to understand how those energies and how those forces interact so that we can use them to live a better life, to be a stronger person, to build a stronger community. So that spiritual life and practice for African people, which is much more than what you call religion, spiritual life involves relating to the forces of nature, the forces of the universe. Okay? And learning how to open yourself up to those energies. And learning also how to practice the very important principle of the African worldview, reciprocity. How that practice helps keep things in balance, so that much of what we do, and you're told these heathen rituals and so forth, is us involving ourselves in a process which is reciprocal with the energies, the Orisha, the Vodou, which can empower us. Now, if we are getting energy from them, we must give energy back, because the African being is very powerful. We're not passive, we participate, we're involved. And that's what we do when we give offerings. That's what we're doing when we symbolize when we pour the water, is that we are asking and so we must give. You see? That concept of reciprocity keeps us from having an exploitative concept of relationship to the universe. Nature in the African view becomes sacred. Nature symbolizes for us the sacred laws and principles of the universe, so that when we see a river and we watch how it works, that becomes high and low and so forth, we understand that something sacred is being said to us and that there's a special power that that river has, so we want to relate to that. The earth, the mountains around us, in every birth of a human being, we see something sacred. You see, so you have a whole different sense of how one learns. One learns also from nature. Not also, but very importantly, one learns from nature. Harmony becomes the goal, the harmonious order. We have a concept of the self which is much more expansive than the European concept. It is not a limited ego. Rather, it is a personal self as being expanded to the communal self, which then understands itself as part of the cosmic self. So in me is the universe. That's what Africans understand. In you is the universe, so that as you come to know self, what are you learning? You're learning the nature of the universe. A Zulu saying says, Ubuntu, Ubuntu, Ubuntu. Anybody can translate that? Well, you will after today. A person is a person because there are people. Bantu. Bantu meaning people. Okay, which is a linguistic term. It's not a racial term. A person is a person because there are people. You understand what that means? Okay, so when we tell you that I and we, in the African conception, people aren't just theorizing and speaking abstractly. This is a lived reality, that I am a person only because there are other African people for me to relate to and to affirm me. Do you understand? So that gives us, see what, how rich this is in terms of us organizing ourselves, reconstructing our communities, and rebuilding an African world order. Human life in the African conception, that is the life of a human being, is a spiritual journey. We have to understand that. We can't avoid that spiritual journey. That's something you got to be involved in because you were born African. It is a process of continual spiritual development. And with that process, as you learn more, then you have a responsibility to teach those who do not know, that is, those who are younger than you. And the culture is organized in such a way that it's guaranteed that you are involved in this learning process. That's what African civilization is all about. They don't take chances with things and say, well, I just hope she turns out right. At every juncture of your life, there are processes that you are going through that are telling you what is the correct way to behave. It's giving you the consciousness of the group. Is making it incumbent upon you to defend the group, you see, and to perpetuate the culture. That's what you're learning. That's not what our children are learning in the schools that we send them to. They are learning how to perpetuate European hegemony, or European control of the world. I want to move to the Maoru principle. I call it the Maoru principle. And Maoru is a term that we get from the Fon people, F-O-N, of ancient Dahomey, the Republic of Benin now. I believe that's still the name.
Yes,
Maoru represents wisdom.
Spell it.
M-A-W-U. The East, the Night, the Moon. And Maoru is paired with her twin, Lisa, L-I-S-A. And that's in Fon language, and there that is, represents the male. And Lisa is symbolized by the day, the sun, by heat and work energy. Maoru rains at night when one rests. Maoru is forgiving. Lisa is angry.
Right.
The question becomes, which is good and which is bad, which is best, which is superior, which is inferior. And the answer is that neither is, that you need both, and both need each other in order for the universe to function.
That's right. That's mine.
And I speak now of the Maoru principle as being recognized as an important ingredient in African civilization. We cannot live in denial of that principle. In fact, we don't even understand now the Lisa principle, which would be in terms of the other, the complementary part of that. We are functioning with a European concept of man, of maleness, which is very, very detrimental. And certainly the European concept of woman, I mean, they don't begin to understand the power of African womanhood. And it's a tremendous mistake, a serious political mistake, ideological mistake for our sisters to be taking leadership from European feminism who haven't got a clue to the depth of African concepts of womanhood. Would never a term from a concept from Kemu, divine motherhood. This is a concept of the legitimizing force in the civilization. That is the sanctioning power for all authority, and that is what Aset represents. That is why you see the symbol of the throne with Aset. That's the sanctioning power. And of course, Mneta gives birth to both male and female. In African cosmology, the concept of the womb is understood as it is nowhere else. The womb is not just a physical organ or has just a physical function. The womb represents creativity. It is an organizing creative principle, an organizing, nurturing principle. It is the organizing, nurturing principle of the universe. That's what the womb represents, and that's why African civilization is matriarchal. That's what Diop was stumbling on, that I don't think saw the depth in. And none of us have, as a matter of fact. But there's so much to be discovered as a principle of life, what the womb is. In Africa, you have female associations and male associations. female associations were not anti-male. You understand what I'm saying? But they were always there. Women always cooperating with each other, helped each other in the market. The market was a place where women were active, where women controlled. This model, though, of the female association and the male association comes from the idea of complementarity and what we call appositional unity. Not oppositional, but appositional. Appositional refers to a pair of things, two things that relate to each other in such a way that each is incomplete without the other, and that both are necessary for the whole. So this concept of appositional unity is one that we need to use in the paradigm that we would use to reconstruct and to rebuild. So the women in terms of African civilization were active participants. Girls then must be taught to be responsible. They're taught to be mothers. They're taught to be warriors. They're taught to make decisions. And they are taught to teach. That's a very important point. Young girls are taught to teach because your mother is understood to be the teacher of the young. You've got to think about how powerful this model becomes once we realize it, once we cleanse ourselves of European concepts. Men, of course, are taught to respect women. Men also, in African society, value children. And everybody in the community focuses on the children. And that's something that we have moved away from at our detriment, to our detriment. So the children become central to the entire social organization. The role of the elders is essential. These are those who have already gone through those various processes. And so they are the ultimate teachers and custodians of the wisdom and must pass it on. And then we have Ma'at. Ma'at, as we know, represents truth, justice, righteousness. It also represents the harmonious order of the universe. It also represents the harmonious order within the person who is to be in tune with the universe. And therefore, Ma'at represents for us the highest standards of conduct. The highest standards of conduct. As Africans, you have a responsibility to live the most Ma'atic life that you can. And therefore, you must be self-disciplined. You must live in truth. And you must examine your behavior and your actions and your decisions every day. So that you become in the habit of living in truth. And that's an ongoing process. It doesn't end, it just continues. You understand? This came to us from our ancestors. You see, who were in tune with the laws of the universe because of their concepts of spirit and of participating in the universe and of the cosmic self. The continual ongoing objective for the African person is self-knowledge because of Ma'at. Coming to know the self, one comes to know the universe, and one therefore is able to live correctly. Again, the thing that I'm saying to you is not the easy, convenient, narcissistic way to live. But you're living in a society which is based on what is easy, right? What is convenient, the way you eat, what is convenient. And what gives you immediate pleasure. Those are the considerations that you know, you were trained him to look at. I'm talking about something radically different from that. It's not the easy way. It is the best way. And it is the only way that will guarantee our happiness, our health as African people. See, because we're special. We have to understand that. With that specialness comes responsibility. In African civilizations, we have the model of rituals that are there to restore the balance, to restore harmony when things get out of kilter. And they always will, because that is in the nature of human existence. So we have to have something to bring it back into balance. Do you understand? There will be crises in your life. You can bet on it. Question becomes, how do you deal with it? See? And again, in African society, they didn't just leave it up to you and say, oh, go on your own. Become a man on your own. Make that decision on your own. Deal with that passing of a loved one on your own. They didn't do that. They had mechanisms which helped you, and the community helped you to restore the balance by understanding what was happening. And that's what the rituals were, not some weird occult thing. But they are ways in which African society continually reorders itself and helps the person to understand and put in the proper context what is happening to her or to him. That's what rituals are for. Rituals, they are rituals to resolve conflict. You see, and that's one of our biggest problems right now. All of these people coming into conflict with each other, and there is no mechanism to resolve those conflicts, and there's nobody to hold them accountable and say, no, you can't do this. You're just disrupting the community. You're just doing this for yourself. But in African civilization, there were rituals to resolve conflicts. Why? Because they did not want a community to be disrupted. Our ancestors did. They anticipated all of these things. There were rituals for cleansing. Because periodically, we need to be cleansed. And that's what we've got to be involved in. We really need that. We need to be creating rituals which will help us to cleanse ourselves. Just like your body needs to be cleansed. And you talk about fasting and so forth, which is very important. And you got to understand that also the spirit needs that. The mind needs that. We need that as a community. We need to come together periodically and cleanse ourselves of all those petty things that we think are differences between us, and of all those things that we have taken on from the Europeans without even realizing it, that are getting in the way of us relating to each other. So we need cleansing, healing, rituals. In African civilization, we have concepts of sacred time that go beyond linear time. Sacred time and sacred space. We have an African term, hantu, which means sacred time and sacred space. That when we can come into a situation, have an experience, and join with our sacred past, because we're able to transcend linear time, which separates past, present, and future, and we become, we experience that all as a whole. We do that in our sacred ceremonies. And if we don't do that, then our psyche is not fed with the kind of experience that we need that keeps us strong and gives us clarity, you see. So we must have experiences which allow us to transcend ordinary, profane reality.
That's
Hantu,
you
said? Yes, H-A-N-T-U. I'm just using that term as for Bantu language, to be sacred time and sacred space. Kagame used that term. And then sexuality, which I talked about before. In the African conception, we must also understand sexuality on a metaphysical level, on a spiritual level. We must understand that as the principles of Mahu and Lisa coming together, as the female and the male principles coming together, because through their interaction, through the exchange of their energies, the universe keeps going. Do you understand? And through that exchange of energy, energy is created. It keeps the universe in equilibrium, and harmony is reinforced. You see the level on which I'm talking about sexuality becomes something very different. Becomes life-giving. It is understood as ritual, which strengthens our life force. It is understood as the recreation of being, as an imitation of divine forces. And if we don't understand it that way, then sexual behavior depletes our energy. It takes away from us. It weakens us. If we do understand it this way, then it becomes sacred, it becomes special, and must be shared only in sacred, special circumstance. And sacred, special terms. And then the question of meaning. African life cannot be lived without meaning. We can't live that way. And that's what we're trying to do now. And what Cambone calls African self-extension orientation, or the African Asili, what I call the African Asili, must have meaning for existence. There must be meaning in life. We must connect always with the whole, okay, with the one. We have to understand how what we do connects us with the whole. That gives us meaning. The context for us becomes the most important thing. The context becomes most important. It is context that gives you meaning. Nature for us shows us the sacred meanings of the cosmos. We live close to nature. So we have to understand what it means for us to be living only in concrete structures that separate us from the environment. You have to understand what that does to the African being. To live where you don't see the sky. To live where you don't touch the earth. Where you don't have trees around you. We begin thinking a tree is a trivial thing, isn't it? Changes your whole being when you are close to these things in terms of breathing, oxygen, all kinds of things. I'm saying this to say that as we plan, because remember we're planning for the African future, then we've got to also think about where we're going to be, what it's going to look like. We have to create our environment. We have to create that environment that is best for African people, and clearly this is not the best environment for African people. So that we understand ourselves as natural beings, we learn by observing nature, we also are able to feel the natural cycles within us, which can only happen as we feel ourselves to be a part of nature. And you begin listening, you can listen to your heartbeat, you see, and that means something to you. How else can we explain that the Dogon people were able to plot the movement of a star that cannot be seen by the naked eye? Nobody's been able to explain that. They come up with all kinds of ridiculous explanations, but what bothers them most, that is the Europeans, is how could they do this without us? How could they do this without our system of thinking, which denies totally spirituality? And I'm saying you can only explain it by understanding a spiritual worldview and understanding the African worldview. Symbolism is extremely important in African thought, in African life. And here I just want to touch on a few things. What we call African art, we're talking about colors. We're talking about, when we talk about music, we talk about dance, what are we talking about? Energy, vibrations. These are forces that affect us. Remember before I was talking about that attack on the psyche? In African civilization, our ancestors understood very well the power of symbols, the power of imagery, the power of creating something with various materials. That's why the masks were so powerful, because they would be used to make something happen. And we have to understand that you wear an African print, it not only means something, but it also has power. The various patterns make rhythms, and rhythm is the key to the universe for the African mind, for the African being. Patterns are rhythm. The alternation of colors is rhythm. It's no accident that we all got rhythm. It's because we understand the nature of the universe. And that brings us in tune with the universe, is through our rhythm. You want to learn anything? Figure out the rhythm. Get the rhythm. You can learn anything. By that, I mean also the patterns. Pattern is rhythm. And then our civilizations were based on a moral order, based on the art, so that our cultural values were spiritually sanctioned. And spirituality is culturally sanctioned for us. It's not like you have a choice whether or not you want to be spiritual. They all come together. Silence in the African conception. This is really something that we must retrieve. Science is the organization of knowledge. But it is the organization of knowledge sacredly based. It is the application of knowledge that has been collectively acquired. It is systematic, it must be useful. But for African people, it is the synthesis of cosmic awareness, which leads to intuitive grasp of the empirical, of phenomenon, and of the universal whole. So that becomes the scientific objective among African people. Initiation is the learning process. It is the emphasis here on process.
What is initiation?
It is a way of learning, a method of learning, where the person must commit herself or himself to what it is that she's learning. You can't just go to a class and sit there and take notes, and you don't know the people around you, you don't know the teacher and so forth, and after a few months then you get afraid and you think you've learned something. Not in this concept. In this concept, you are learning the self as you learn the universe, which means that you are learning in a holistic way. That you, through your commitment, through this process of initiation, you are internalizing the knowledge that you've given. That's when that information becomes knowledge. It's through that internalization. And that's why you hear about initiation processes and stages in African civilization, because it's the process that is important. It's the way in which you are learning that affects you deeply, not just something off the top of your head. In European conception, you can have a person who goes through all of their schools, reaches their highest levels, becomes a quote-unquote scientist, and then is a moral idiot. Do you understand? Because all of those other things that we take for granted were not being taught in that process. As Africans, it has no meaning. In fact, it's dangerous, right? If you aren't learning yourself at the same time, you're not getting knowledge of yourself, if you are not having...
Justice Radio Station. Jailhouse Psychotherapy for the Individual, 8 p.m. Eastern, at Your Bookstore for Justice.info. If you do not understand the human mind, you will remain a slave to beliefs of someone else. Jailhouse Psychotherapy, nightly, 8 p.m. Eastern, Black Talk Radio Network.
Radio.
This is an escape correctional and recording.
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
Am I really who I am?
Am I all I ought to be?
Who am I?
Who am I?
It is the science of the human spirit is what we're talking about here. So that, for instance, among the Akan people, you have the concept of Okra, which is that aspect of the spirit that comes directly from the creative principle. You have the Ntono, which is that aspect of the spirit that comes from the male principle. You have the Moja, which comes directly from the female, and also accounts for how a group family is organized. And then you have the Sintum, which accounts for the uniqueness, for the unique personality of that human being. All of these together is what makes up the human being. I mean, obviously here we have the basis of a science of the human spirit, an understanding of the human spirit. These are the models that we have to begin looking at in a very serious way. We're going to reconstruct our nation. In the African conception, spirit and matter are joined. Spirit and matter are joined. Spirit is energy. Matter is the form that energy takes. Spirit is consistent. The material form will change. Right now you are in a particular material form, but then spirit is eternal, you see. Matter is the manifestation of spirit. In the African understanding, spirit is the force. And so, the Orishan, the Amazon, which is a three word, the Abram, which is the ancestors in Yoruba language, the Isamanfo, which is the ancestors in Twi language, they are manifestations of spirit. The other form that spirit takes at a particular time. Shango is a form that spirit takes at a particular time in a particular circumstance for a particular reason. So we have to understand that. And in coming to understand that, we are learning physics as we learn metaphysics. You see how much there is in the knowledge of African civilization. Quality of human life has supreme value in African civilization. It was human-oriented. The idea is that human beings need each other. Again, Ubuntu, 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 that I am nothing without you. You see? And so, I think one of the things that we come to understand that we do run from as we run into these non-African religions is that we are, as African people, are human manifestations of sacred, of divine principles. Again, as African people, we're very special. We are the human manifestation of divine cosmic principles. Now, we can't just pat ourselves on the back that we're really special. Because with that comes tremendous responsibility. We've been born African. We were chosen to be born African. And that made us the people of nature. We are the people of nature. And we have a responsibility to protect it. So we create structures and lifestyles which reflect the nature. One of the problems, let me first say that Diop, and some of you have been reading Diop, one of the things he understood was the protective function of culture. One of the problems is that we have not understood that. I'm going to repeat that. Diop calls culture a rampart which protects people. Okay? It gives them a sense of collectivity and helps to protect them from what he called, one point I think he talks about cultural assault. That we live in a time of cultural assault. We haven't understood that. Cultural aggression is what he said. We haven't understood that. That has been a weakness of the African worldview, I do believe. In other words, I'm not saying that we shouldn't look critically at the consciousness of our people and our ancestors, because there are things that we know now which should compel us to change. And I'm talking about the problem of African xenophilia. Europeans are xenophobic. Meaning that they have a fear, therefore a hatred of strangers or anything that's different. Africans are xenophilic. We have an openness, they are called the cosmopolitanism. An openness to strangers, and we have an inability to recognize anyone. Now, this comes from, I think, comes partly from the traditional worldview, but it also comes from what is contemporary African self-hatred on the one hand and African materialism on the other. And therefore, we either give away our culture or we sell it. It's the most serious political mistake that we are making right now, 1992. It is worse than it has ever been. And I'm referring to a lot of things, but I think the epitome of it for me is the fact that in your spiritual practice. Organize your spiritual practice here, right here, in the greater New York area, you might call it. You have what I call Wazulus. Okay, Wazulus is a key language term for human beings. You have, this is a blasphemy. You have the people who are supposed to be most knowledgeable in our culture, our spiritual system, the Baba Lama, the various priests and so forth. You have them initiating Europeans. Okay, now that's been going on for some time, so that what we have now is Europeans who are initiating us. And I'm very serious about that. Okay, I think that what we don't understand is that culture is a weapon. We also do not understand that our spiritual practices should be a source for African nation building. We've got to learn to use our spirituality politically. And that has been weakness of us as a people. So when we think we can make the separation and say, when you question our brothers and sisters who are doing this and engaged in it and just giving it, letting anybody in anywhere, I mean, we can't go places, right? We can't go to their favorite place. They will tell you, this is just religion. Doesn't have anything to do with politics. That's really the mistake that we have made. And I believe that these Europeans understand very well that the future kind of locus of our power will be in our spiritual conceptions. And so what they're doing is putting themselves in the way of us getting to them. And we have to hold accountable. Those of us who have the knowledge cannot sell it. And I'm saying that they are selling it. Okay, we cannot allow that anymore. And I don't mean to just start, you know, you start attacking this one or the other one, because it all comes from a lack of organization. It also comes from a lack of understanding the culture of the weapon. The culture is a rampart. It is our culture that is our strength, so we cannot give that away. And nor can we sell it. You see? Because that's like giving away. And so finally, I want to just end by reminding you of the definitions or the explanations of nation building. I think I'll just read that one more time. Nation building is the conscious and focused application of our people's collective resources, energies, and knowledge to the task of liberating and developing the psychic and physical space that we identify as ours. That's what nation building is. So it can take place wherever we are. Right. And that we see ourselves not as a small nation state, but as a world nation. And that is the building of the African world order. And I am putting forth to you today that we cannot do that without or until we involve ourselves in a cleansing process and cleanse ourselves of European concepts so that we can embrace the African worldview and use it as a foundation, as a paradigm for reconceptualization of the member of the African world nation. That's my new summit. I think that the African from the continent who was saying to you that you were white man, meaning that you had taken on all these ways, was probably saying it because he wanted you to be there, in the sense that he might have wanted to be there himself. So that he was looking at those things as being positive. Because you couldn't be European. Now, I don't care what you took on, what you tried to be. I don't care if you married a white woman. No. You still can't be a European. And so what that does is that it means that all of these things that we take on, And the more that we do it, that it makes us more and more and more pathological. That it is a sickness and illness for us to try to be other than what we are naturally. So what I'm talking about, when I talk about the closing, is also a healing process of coming back to ourselves. It's a recentering. You see, if you don't have a center, then you have no basis for making judgments or decisions. And what we've been doing is making other people's decisions. Or thinking that we've been making decisions, but really acting as other people have been manipulating us, you know, to act. Also problematical in terms of we will have to get our brothers and sisters from the continent to understand this whole issue of what, it's so ironic to me that Africans on the continent use the term tribe. It's not an African term. And in European context, it is a derogatory term. They don't talk about European tribes, they talk about European nations. And because of the conditions under which we learn the language, colonial conditions, then we accept these terms, and then we start saying, I'm from this tribe.
Democracy versus justice.
And that is a call to arms. And this sister is instrumental in that message. A call to arms. You have to understand that African people get caught in this same death trap time after time. The Egyptians found themselves in this trick bag. Under the oppression of the Persians, they welcomed the Greeks in. The Greeks fought for them, and what happened? The Greeks ended up being their conquerors. You see it in history time and time again. The Coptics found themselves under Roman oppression. They invited the Arabs. The rest you know. That's as a result. That's why Egypt is part of the Arab family today. We do not want to do our own fighting and dying. Somalia is 99.9%.